Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host, Matt Watson. Very excited to be joined today by Chuck Rinker, the founder and CEO of Personas. He's got a really cool technology with digital personalities and AI, and actually doing it way before the AI craze of today. So excited to talk a lot more about that today. I do want to remind you, today's episode is brought to you by Fullscale, which is my company. We have 300 employees building all kinds of software development for our customers, startups, scale-ups, front-end, back-end, mobile, all the different things. You can check us out at fullscale.io. Well, Chuck, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, man. It's going to be a fun conversation.
So I think it's really cool. You're doing this stuff with digital personalities and AI and all this stuff, and this is kind of a timely conversation. So I was talking to our head of recruiting and stuff at Fullscale yesterday, and we were talking about how do we interview people and do screening and all this stuff. And I was telling him, like, man, there's AI technology out there for like that does this like digital personality stuff, like avatar or whatever, that helps with interviewing. Like, the technology has dramatically changed. And I told him, I'm like, man, we could probably have a poop emoji that's actually video interviewing people. Yeah, like, absolutely. I'm sure, I think that's probably a thing. Like, we could actually do that. So it was very convenient to be on the podcast with you today to see if we can get that a poop emoji to use as our screen.
There you go. Well, it's kind of, it's ironic you say that, because that's not as far off as people think. You know, it's really, no. What does your brand represent? Not saying your brand represents poop, but you know what I'm saying.
No.
You can really create whatever personality you need to represent your brand. If you were to take your brand and turn that into a personified character, what would that brand be? And that's really the power we have at our fingertips today.
It would be the geek emoji, I guess.
Now you're talking big pointy heads and all,
But, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't have any interest in living in this like metaverse where, you know, we show up to a meeting and my stupid coworkers, one of them might be a unicorn and the other one might be a poop AI or whatever. Like, I don't really want to live in that world. So I'm hoping that you're doing something way better and more useful with these AI personalities. So tell me about actually good use cases for this, because that is not one for me.
Well, ironically, it's way different. Metaverse, we started down there just because of the craze, and once the novelty wore off, the practicality really wasn't there.
Oh yeah.
And I'll make it very quick. We're really all about using AI technology, in particular avatars, and we'll dig into that about Uncanny Valley and why avatars, to me, into a good portion of the world, even supported through studies, why the avatar has so many benefits over even conversational AI.
Okay.
So the point is, we're all about human communication, not human replication. We're not trying to replace a human. We're not trying to create a proxy, like you said, a unicorn talking for a character. It's really about It's kind of like the old Star Trek show. If you remember the old Star Trek, when Scotty picks up his mouse and goes, "Hey, computer, I need you to talk to it." So it's really about breaking down the barriers of how we have access to technology. All these IoT technologies, conversational AI, chat GPT, speech to text, text to speech, speech synthesis, language translation, all these geeky things that exist in the cloud. But at the end of the day, when you and I talk, we're having a conversation. We've got gesture-based communication going on. Your eyelids weighs up. Your eyes get big. We smile at each other. We ask questions. And that's a human communication that creates trust, an empathy, an apathy, a communication bond between you and your audience. And that's why chatbots, people don't like them. That's why internet voice response systems, the first thing people do when they pick up an internet voice response system on the phone is pound on the zero key until a live person gets on there. Because we as humans have evolved over millions of years to talk and communicate as humans.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, what personas is a personality engine, is how do I recreate a personality that basically turns all this wonderful AI and automation technology into a agent, a conversational agent that can act as a customer service rep or a first line of defense or first line of communication with your audience, whoever that is. So that's really what we are. We're a communications company, not really an AI company.
And so the end result of this is, I think you mentioned you're using this a lot in hospital settings. So it could be like an iPad or some kind of mobile app that has this kind of digital personality that you're talking to about your bill or different things. Like, what are the common use cases that you're using this for?
Yeah, ironically, the one-to-one personal engagement with Siri and Alexa are pretty mature. And as an individual, we really focus on more public sector. How does it go when you have in the hospital? You asked about hospital use case specifically. You've got a series of frontline healthcare workers that right now in the UK and the US are massively overburdened. You got healthcare professional, HCP burnout. People are leaving in drones. They're overburdened. They're underpaid, all that good stuff. How do you relieve that burden? So really, it's not about giving somebody an app, although we can run a mobile app. Matter of fact, I'm going to be a little unorthodox and show you a unit we're just shipped to the National Health Service. I'm in a demo suite right now. And that unit there, oh, it looks like they only have the screen up, is a kiosk that basically sits at a physical location. We don't build the kiosk. We're a software company. And if you walked into a Home Depot or a hospital and you say, she'll say, "Hey, welcome to Princess Alexandra Hospital. How can I help you?" "Well, I just broke my arm. How do I get to the emergency room?" "My kid's in a surgery right now. I just want to get a cup of coffee." "How much does it cost to do parking?" "Hey, I need to stay overnight because my kid was admitted. Is there a local hotel?" So all those services that are now being asked of the surgeons, the nurses, sometimes front reception if the hospital is large enough to have a patient experience staff. And we're really just trying to act as that communication liaison. That unit, and I apologize, I'm going to probably fire it up earlier, later so you can see it, can speak 150 languages. We have patents on sign language. So we're really about inclusivity, diversity. Wow. I don't care what language you speak. I don't care what gender you are. The brand, to your point earlier about avatar and the poop emoji or the unicorn, we allow the customer to say, "What is your brand?"
Right.
So like for Princess Alexandra Hospital, it's a black female, probably 35 years old, and probably relatable to what the demographic of the hospital that it's serving is. Okay. Where we've done trials where we're creating middle-aged white men for a clinical trial, or 14-year-old Hispanic females, and how do they speak? What are the cultural diversity? What are the cultural differences between the different demographics of your audience? So we're really building that communication platform that identifies with your audience. And that's kind of where I get back to this whole inclusivity, diversity, communication. We're really about creating that bond. One good example of a use case, and I didn't answer that question earlier, is what are some of the practical use cases? We've actually had pretty good success in the clinical trial world. Clinical trials in the U.S. at least are about 70% middle-aged white guys. I mean, I'm a middle-aged white guy, so I can say this. That's not representative of the population of all the clinical trials that we need to go through and we need to recruit for and we need to complete to improve outcomes for all. So we create engagement platforms. Like one we're doing right now is for opioid addicted young mothers. So we create Hispanic, Black, white females that are between 15 and 30 years old. And the interviews, to your point about interviewing, are all conducted with these culturally appropriate avatars. And we find the response rate goes way up. You recruit more patients. You retain them longer. You got to get through the trial to have the outcomes data. And you create more of a trust. People provide more accurate information to an avatar than they do a live human. That's the power we're trying to bring to the enterprise world.
Well, I think this is really cool technology. And I think there are definitely places where it could be super helpful. Like even it's in a mall and you're like, I need somebody to tell me information about the mall. Like we don't need to necessarily pay somebody minimum wage to sit here all day long, not do one damn thing, and then tell somebody where the bathroom is, right? Like if we can use technology to do that, that sounds great. I've also seen stuff kind of like this in casinos. Aren't there stuff kind of like this in casinos now, or there's like a virtual like dealer and stuff? Yep. That's kind of similar technology, right?
It's a very similar technology. Those are typically more tied to a back-end gaming engine. We have a big gaming background, so that's very purpose-built. What we've done that's different than anybody, I believe, at least the first to do it back in 2013, we knew that the use cases for this technology were coming. We're ex-EA Sport game developers, the Madden NCAA franchise. CTO was one of my Madden developers. Probably half our company came from the gaming space. And we learned long ago that there's certain engagement techniques that gamers know. There's certain things you know. People always say, oh, you're getting my kid addicted to games. Well, what if we could get people addicted to their own health? What if we could get people addicted to your brand? What if we could get people addicted to doing the right thing? So what we've done is take that technology of, well, we can't be all things to all people. So we created a platform. So just like someone would pay a company, one of these chatbot companies, to say, okay, I need to give customer support on a website, they would get a text chatbot. We designed a personality platform. So everything that makes a personality. What makes Matt, Matt? How do you look? What knowledge base do you have upstairs? What mannerisms? How would you respond to certain questions? What is the languages you speak? Basically, what makes you Matt? And if that's the image you put out, we roll all that into a platform. So then we partner with other technology companies. We've got a visitor management company out of the Netherlands called G10. We got Mapped In, who is a great partner that does wayfinding solutions. We do Locus Labs Lobby Guard, which is a check-in, a visitor check-in system for large corporations, kind of these digital front door type applications, clinical trial management systems. So we build this UX layer that is a conversational engine, a human conversation engine, and put it on top of enterprise solutions. So that's what we do a little bit different. The healthcare solution that I was showing you, or we're going to show you, is us building a system specifically on top of one of these healthcare enterprise solutions and then packaging it with we call it powered by personas, with that personality engine to break down, okay, now you got to learn a new system. You got to download an app to your phone. You got to figure out how to register for it. You got to know how to log in and use it. People aren't going to do that in their day-to-day operations.
Please don't ask me to download an app. I've had enough of that.
Exactly. So that's why we're breaking down and making these basically virtual agents for the physical world.
So I'm in the way that this works today, this must have, you must also use cameras, and it has like visual object recognition, stuff like that, right? To know that somebody walked up to you and it like looks at them, like it does all that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, actually it does. And it really depends on the hardware. We're pretty hardware agnostic. So it really depends on what the client needs. Like the particular unit that we just deployed for the National Health System there in Europe actually has a sonar sensor built into it. And the reason we put a sonar into that unit is so when people come to the hospital, they don't even need to know even how to use a touchscreen. Although it has touchscreen, ELO is a great partner of ours. The ELO is the biggest touchscreen manufacturer in the world. But in any sense, if you don't want to speak, we still don't want to take away what people are used to. So the point is even though it's a touch-enabled experience, the sonar, to your question, gives them a sense, our avatar, to know when someone's up approaching and wants some help. So when you walk up to the unit, it'll say, hey, welcome to Princess Alexandria Hospital. what can I help you find? How can I help you? Other times it's webcams for analytics, you know, so we can measure if people are angry or frustrated. If they get too frustrated, our system can automatically go, oh, I'm sorry, I can see that I'm not getting you the information you need. Let me text a human. Let me get someone over here to help you. And the systems are fully versed in knowing that they're not all things to all people. So instead of you pounding the zero button on your voice response system, she'll sense that you're frustrated, and then she'll send a text message or an email for live help if needed. So we're not trying to replace humans. We're trying to remove the burden. That's the number one issue that people complain. They see it. It looks like a human. It looks like an animated human. And they first thing out of their mouth is they've watched too many Hollywood movies, and they think we're trying to take people's jobs. No, we're trying to give them a faster, better computer that happens to have eyes and ears and that can talk to you like a human instead of having you learn another piece of software.
So you started doing this over 10 years ago. I'm curious, how has this changed, you know, especially over the last 2, 3, 4 years of all the newer AI technology stuff that's come out? So like when something like ChatGPT and stuff comes out, have you guys, you know, taken advantage of that, or you guys already had a platform that worked really well? How does that affect your business?
Actually, it's been great. We've been a partner. As a matter of fact, we've been in the innovation lab at Microsoft for a long time. They're probably our biggest innovation partner. So anytime a big company like Microsoft that has, you know, infinitesimally more resources than we have advances a certain technology, we're able to capitalize that because of that personality engine. So if you think about it as a cake, if the bottom layer is all this fancy technology, speech to text, RT, ChatGPT, whatever, language translations, we build that layer, that personality layer. So then those applications we talk about sit on top of our personality engine. So as soon as we readopt an advancement in Microsoft or other third parties, Microsoft's not our only third party vendor, or another vendor that improves what we've done or what they've done, the enterprise software is automatically going to get those benefits because it's abstracted through our platform layer. So we basically create that buffer. So how it's really affected, I guess the short answer is scalability, cost and scalability. When we first started doing this in 2013, you know, you might get $250,000 wrapped up into one experience. We did one for Pepsi and the Seattle Mariners that ran for about a year at a Mariner Stadium. And, you know, that was a big 8-foot-tall holographic moose sitting at the Pepsi booth at the stadium greeting kids and taking selfies. And we got about 48,000 selfies in one season. So that was a pretty high profile, high dollar piece. But now we can deliver experiences for, get them out the door in less than 30 days for a fraction of the cost. So those advancements you're talking about have made the experience better, response times faster, knowledge base improvements, basically a better experience, and it's all done at a cheaper cost, and it's only going to get better and better.
That's really cool, man. Well, the development of this stuff has to be really, really complicated. If you're listening and you need software developers, check us out at Full Scale. We've got 300 employees doing all kinds of software development work, QA, project management, mobile front and back end, all these different things. You can check us out at fullscale.io. What kind of challenges do you have with building this? I mean, obviously, you've been doing this for a long time, but I imagine it's got to be pretty complex to build the software.
Ironically, it's incredibly complex. But at the end of the day, you'll understand this with your technical background. At the end of the day, we're bringing gaming characters out of a game engine and into the physical world. So everybody talks about augmented reality, doing it through visuals. We do it through experiential piece. So really, the benefit that we tout, which doesn't resonate with everybody, but the people that understand and have been in the gaming space realize that the gaming industry typically stays about 10 to 15 years ahead of enterprise corporate. Meaning kids spend so much money. I shouldn't even just say kids, adults. Matter of fact, probably the late 20s, early 30s expendable cash demographic is probably the biggest game sellers. They spend tons and tons of money, and we've got to crank out supercomputer-like graphics and a little console you can pick up at a Walmart for $300. When I was first doing AI, I was doing it for military simulations for the U.S. government up in D.C. Spent my first 20 years up there. And, you know, we would just throw money at it, more hardware at it. So my point is, is that the technology advances and the complexities you talk about are absolutely there. However, when you look at what it takes to create a digital personality and a virtual human and artificial intelligence, how do you think Mario has been running around Mario World for the last 20 years? That's AI. People don't see it. That is AI. Matter of fact, the old Pac-Man game, Pong, was AI. You know, how do you do a Pong game with tennis, virtual pixel tennis balls? How do you do a Pac-Man game? That is artificial intelligence at its core. This has been around for 20, 30, 40 years, and people think AI is new. No, it's just gotten better and better and better, and now it's at a point where it's starting to become very close to human communication. We've known this for 30 years. So the complexities that you refer to, yes, it's absolutely hard. And yes, you need specialized developers for that. You need 3D animators. You need 3D rendering. You need real-time text people. You need speech experts. You need audio experts. You need hardcore back-end AI. You need cloud technologists. You need IT infrastructure specialists. You need a behavioral scientist. You need data analysts. You need all these complex pieces.
Okay, hang on. What you're saying is the shit's complicated.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's
sounds complicated.
And that's why we believe in the power of that personas platform. We've done all that and put it into an API SDK. So if you have an enterprise solution and you say, hey, this is the future, but how do I invest? How do I hire Matt's 300 people offshore to build me a custom solution? That's a tough sell. But if I could say, hey, hire five of Matt's guys, take our API and then build your enterprise solution with them as an integrator. That's what we're trying to do to scale. We're just trying to scale human AI.
Well, there's so many good use cases for this kind of stuff. And actually, I really think hiring and recruiting is one of those, because at Full Scale, there's been months before we've had 1,000 people apply for a job.
Oh, wow. Yep.
You can't interview 1,000 people.
No.
It's not possible. Can we use AI and a digital personality to help do some screening and stuff? Like, yeah, that sounds awesome. They don't need to look like a poop emoji. We'll figure out something better. But we, you know, like, it's just not possible to have enough humans to do some of this stuff. So today we use basically a goofy like screening test and whatever, but people don't want to take these screening tests. I was talking to my team about this. I'm like, if you recruited me today to be the CTO of some company or whatever, and the first thing you want me to do is take some stupid coding test, I'd tell you to pound sand.
Exactly. Like,
there's no way I'm doing this.
No, so, you're spot on.
Yeah, but now if it was a human or some, you know, maybe really cool digital personality basically asking me the same questions, I would probably begrudgingly answer the questions, right? So I think it makes total sense. I think there's got to be a lot of use cases for this kind of technology. And so do you have partners that are using your technology in like recruiting and like different kinds of things, or?
In recruiting, yes, but not in the same capacity you think, but you're spot on with the use case. Our biggest problem is this thing has too many uses. You know, it's kind of like saying, how can you use ChatGPT? Well, that's kind of a bogus question. You know, you can use it for about anything, but we do use it for patient recruitment in the healthcare. So when you're trying to reach a certain target demographic and I want to know, okay, do you have type 2 diabetes? Have you had any cancer in the last 5 years? Are you on any prescription med? What's your weight? What's your age? What is your socioeconomic background? All those questions you have to do to qualify for a clinical trial, instead of taking up the healthcare professional's time. And it's not meant to replace them. Like I said, it's meant you brought up a great word I didn't use, screening. It's meant to help take that mundane, repetitive workload off of the employees, so that you and your team, Matt, can focus in on, okay, now I've taken these 1,000 applicants, and now I've got 10 qualified applicants that we're going to vet further, doing only what humans can do. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Another good example of this that's, you know, similar but slightly different is I live in Kansas City, and right down the street from me, I don't know why, but we seem to have one of the like pilot stores for McDonald's. Okay. And I think we were one of the first stores in the country to test their drive-through ordering, which was all handled through AI. And the first times I used it, it was kind of clunky. But when I use it today, it does a way better job than any human I've ever seen at taking an order. Like, I don't know how many times I go to a place and I order something and they spend like 5 minutes fumbling around on the computer. Right. Like, you know, these things can eventually do the job actually better than humans can. And from a customer perspective, I'm actually happier. Like, it actually just works and I'm on my way, instead of trying to get a human that actually wants to work and show up to work and begrudgingly doesn't really want to do their job to halfway do their job, right?
Well, you keyed in on something that not many people key in on, and that's the fact that AI is not a silver bullet. Artificial intelligence is, think of it as an empty brain, and you've got to fill it with the knowledge to do the job you're asking. Just like you have to train an employee, you have to train that artificial intelligence. So we go into what we call a continuous improvement mode, improvement program. We're learning, we're listening to your customers. That's something very few people do. And that AI, not only to your point about McDonald's, if you walk up and it gets it wrong, that information is now in that system.
Right. And they're training it.
Yep. And they're training. Data analysts are going, wait, why was this order not successful? Oh, because Matt called it, you know, cheddar instead of cheese.
Matt has five kids and his order is complicated and his wife keeps changing her mind. That's the problem.
Yep. But you keyed in on a good portion about AI has to be trained, AI has to be maintained, and AI has to be fed data. It needs that data to be trained.
Yeah. And different languages, right? I mean, how we would say something in English is totally different if somebody else comes through the McDonald's drive-thru and wants to speak in Spanish or French or German or whatever.
Yep.
Like, and it's just totally cool that all this stuff is possible. And I realize at the end of the day, for some of these people, it does eliminate some jobs, right? Whoever was taking orders at McDonald's. But hopefully those people can do something that requires like more intelligence and a better job and a more meaningful future than taking an order at McDonald's too. So
I know I talk a lot, but I'm going to grab that moment because there was a keynote speech I gave for Ricoh USA in Infocom way back in 2019 pre-pandemic. And it was specifically on that fear, that unfounded fear, as I'll call it. And the title of my presentation was called Being Human. And it was, what does it really mean to be human? And the number one thing that came out of this conversation about what humans are is this misconception that we're taking people's jobs. And you say we're going to replace. Yes, we might decrease staff requirements. But, you know, to be honest, when you move from a manual typewriter to a word processor, we removed a lot of secretarial jobs as well, typist jobs. To your point, though, the data, the takeaway from that discussion on what does it mean to be human and what does it mean to be from a productivity standpoint is it's really all about improving productivity, not replacing humans.
Yeah.
And what we found is that only 30% of an employee's time can actually be automated on average, only 30%. It's still in all the complexities of ChatGPT and AI, you still can't replace humans, but you can give them 30% of their workday back to be better at what they do, to provide services to your customers that only humans can do. And at the end of the day, what you found, if you took a pool of a mass population of technology workers in the US and they ran them through these statistics based on, okay, what if we replace this many people? What you found is your average pay, your average workload was always increased. I mean, people made more money. They had higher job satisfaction because they were doing high value work versus what you just asked me about. You mentioned it earlier. You just asked me, you know, where can I find the restroom again? Or where can I find the toilets? Or where can I get a cup of coffee? So people were happy in their jobs and they made more money because they were doing stuff that was high value engagement that humans are good at. So I just wanted to stress that because that's the number one, I'll repeat that over and over, number one thing that people believe that is absolutely false is that human AI companies are out there to take jobs.
Well, and I think that's true when it comes to software development as well. So from my experience so far in all things software development, software engineering related, AI is really helpful. GitHub Copilot, ChatGPT, all these things, it's very helpful. But there's no way, from my perspective, I don't think it replaces more than 30% of your job, just like you said. Yes. I don't even know if it's that much. I feel like it saves you 15 minutes twice a day. Like, I could have tediously figured this thing out. Instead of finding it on Stack Overflow, I asked ChatGPT, like, okay, write some code that loops through this thing and does this thing and whatever, and I copy and paste it. And then I still got to make more changes to it because ChatGPT doesn't give me exactly what I wanted anyways. I actually was trying to use ChatGPT the other day, and I give it very clear directions,
but it would only do like 80% of the work. And I was trying to get it to put in like the names of all the database columns and all this. And mm-hmm. I actually told it what the columns were, but it wasn't doing it. So it's like I had to keep asking it more questions, you know, instead of me just doing the work. And one of the things I always talk about is humans are lazy, right? Like we could have a shovel in our hand and it's like it would take us 5 minutes to dig this hole. But we'd rather spend the entire day trying to find a backhoe.
Yeah.
Instead of doing the 5 minutes worth of work, right? And sometimes I feel like AI is the same way. It's like I could have just wrote that code in 5 minutes, but instead I spent 20 minutes trying to get ChatGPT to do it because, well, I thought it was cool and I thought ChatGPT would actually take less than 5 minutes, but it actually took more time. Like I think there's a lot of that too. Like we're looking for tools. We're looking for the magic easy button. But if we would just do the work, it would actually take less time.
Well, you bring up a good point there, and it's a great example about the coding because it's the I call AI a catalyst. It gets you to a certain point faster, but like you, what do they always talk that little graph right over? So where's your break even point? You know, where's your point of diminishing returns? But if you use AI for that proper use, hey, give me the construct. I don't want to look through the manual. Give me the construct of my conditional statement I'm trying to pull together or what have you. I haven't programmed in decades, but actually it's not true, but let's say not like I used to. But let's say you're using ChatGPT for that. To your point, if you'd have gotten that original construct set up or the original logic structure set up and then plugged in using your human intelligence, you might have maybe not passing judgment, but you might've got to the end solution quicker. Yeah. But if you equate that to what we're trying to do with, there's the character now that it's up and running, what we're trying to do with Alex there at the National NHS, National Health System, is she's not meant there to be all things to all people. She's not going to do your appendectomy for you. She's there to get you to your appointments faster and let the doctor do what he does without waiting around for 15 minutes for you to show up late for your appointment. She's there to help you find a cup of coffee so you're not stopping the nurse that's on her way to triage and asking the nurse where's the coffee shop or where can she use the restroom. You know, that's the reality. So your good analogy on the technology front and preaching to the choir.
Yeah, I think on the software development side, it can be very helpful for sure. It can. But my point is sometimes I feel like we use AI as like this crutch and we actually spend more time like jacking with it. But the thing that AI does do is it lowers the kind of experience level it takes to do some things. Like especially in software development, I could go ask it like, okay, how do I create a pivot table in SQL Server or whatever? And it would like create the code. But the you know, maybe you'd have to have a lot more experience before you would know like the syntax of all that and whatever. And it saves you time. But the issue with a lot of that with AI is like you wouldn't even know to ask it to make a pivot table. Like you wouldn't even know that was a thing. Like that's part of the problem that people don't realize is you still need experience to even know like what to ask it, like to know to ask AI that this is actually a useful thing. So I think
You're proving the stance that it's not a replacement, a human replacement. It's a productivity tool that
communicates
as a human. Yeah.
So I know you've a couple times you've talked about your physical device there in your room and showed it. That's really cool. And if you're listening, by the way, you can actually see this on YouTube. So we have a YouTube channel now, and you can go check out the Startup Hustle podcast on YouTube.
Awesome.
And you can see that digital avatar you're talking about. It looks pretty cool. So you mentioned before we were recording that you started out as a farmer. You've done some really high tech stuff and you know built video games, all this stuff. You're building digital personalities, but somehow wound up back at the farm.
Yeah. Well, I'll give that. And you're going to get into one of these tearjerker moments because my dad's getting up there in age, and growing up on the farm as a cattle farmer, it taught you, I think, one thing. Basically, the world doesn't owe you anything. And that you have a work ethic. What you got to have, what you want, you got to work for it. So as I went through and I farmed until I was about 18, I showed a certain technology aptitude and bought an old, we call them trash 80s, the old Radio Shack computers for those older listeners on there. That was, you know, a black and white TV that had a cassette tape to load and store your programs on. And he went to a cohort, one of his clients actually, and said, you know, my son's shown a technology aptitude. He said, half seriously, but half jokingly, he's too smart to be a farmer. Now, I don't want to offend farmers out there. I have a whole farming family. But he said that, and it really set me on a path for getting in with Navy Credit Union, did a lot of early financial systems, and kind of set that pace on the technology world. Now, the reason I go back to it is because there's a certain solitude and there's a certain satisfaction you get from working with your hands and creating something physical and seeing physical product of your labors. And so, yeah, after decades of being in the virtual space and writing software for a career, I have admittedly bought my little tractor and bought a little 30-acre plot there north of Raleigh. And I tend to, cut down trees and saw them up for lumber and have fun out on the farm and have cattle out in the field. So it's there's a satisfaction and a tranquility about going back to that life.
Well, I have to be honest. I've been a software developer, entrepreneur. I spend all day on a computer for the last 25 years of my life. But there's honestly something therapeutic for me about working with my hands. Like, absolutely. I don't know why, like doing house projects and like painting or different things, it's almost like very therapeutic to me. Do you feel it has that same effect for you?
Absolutely. You're spot on. You just said it a lot more succinctly than I did.
Yeah.
Therapeutic's a good word.
Yeah, I enjoy it. And I think everybody has different things in their life that are kind of that way. I think golf has a little bit of that. Same thing. Although golf is highly frustrating and obnoxious, but there's something therapeutic about just like going golfing, being on the course for 5 hours and kind of feeling like you're disconnected from the world. Like there's something about that that's therapeutic, even though like spending 5 hours trying to find a ball is not fun, but there's something therapeutic about it. And I think we need those things in our life.
Yeah, you're playing golf all wrong, Matt. You can need to play golf like I do. I'm probably a 20 plus handicapper, and I've been that way for 30 years. But I don't care. I'm not there for the score.
No. Oh, no, you're just keeping. No. I got a better tip. I figured out the tip.
All right.
You change how you keep score. So I just keep score. I just keep score based on how many balls I lost.
Okay.
And if I find somebody else's ball, that works in my advantage.
That's a net zero outcome, right?
Yeah.
A sum zero sum outcome.
So, sometimes I'm under. I have a negative score. I found other people's balls. So that's how I play golf.
Actually, I'm going to have to try that one next time I'm on the course.
How many balls do I lose? That's how I keep score.
That's a good gauge of success.
Well, I think it's been awesome having you on the show today, and I think this is a really cool business that you have, and sounds like you've been very successful at it for a long period of time, and it's incredible you've been doing this. You've had this company for over 20 years, but you've been doing this specific product for 10 years in AI, and it's very cool, and it's cool to see how all the different use cases you could have for it. One of the questions I definitely wanted to ask you is, and I know this is a big problem for a lot of entrepreneurs, is how do you stay focused, right? If you've got a lot of clients, like Microsoft comes to you and says, I want you to do this thing, and the Seattle Mariners want you to do this thing, and the health system in Europe wants you to do this thing. Like, how do you deal with that part of it and the priority of that and telling people no? Like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I'm pretty bad at telling people no, but at the end of the day, I'll self-confess that I'm a little bit of a micromanager. And so I basically put, first party customers up top. And to be honest, if I probably was a little more open to that scalability, we might be a larger company. But my rebuttal to that is that I think there's very, very, very rarely a day I wake up. You got to remember, I would write video games and do creative production and creative development for fun if I didn't even have a job. So the fact that I get to wake up and do something fun, creative, take everything I've learned in 30 years of simulation and gaming and do something good with it. Not only does it pay the bills, but we can also help patients. We can help people. We can try to play into this culture of diversity and inclusion. We have a couple of deaf consultants I've become very fond of from the deaf community, and to hear their stories firsthand and see how they're basically treated as if they have a disability. And it's a really kind of a sad situation that so many people are left out because of their physical capabilities and decisions that they make about their, their culture and their diversity. And it's just kind of sad. So to be honest, to be able to break up and take these game things that I've had fun with for 30 years and still have fun with them, but do something, we call it personas with a purpose, to do something that's got a little bit better purpose is pretty motivational. And it keeps me from thinking of this as a work and as a job, and just kind of find those customers that want to do the right thing and want to innovate in that sector. And you'll find another sad statement is very few companies, especially the large companies, are so set in their status quo, breaking out of this is how we've always done business, or this is the way we're going to do business. Really, I don't have people coming out of the woodworks, knocking on my door going, hey, we want to be better. We want to do things differently. We want to innovate. We want to be more inclusive. We want to expand. We want to improve productivity. We want to decrease our staff burden. We want to increase our staff revenues. All those positivities that come out of the advancements we're seeing, 90% of them go, ooh, you're just trying to take my job again. And they just think of it in such a, pardon the French, but a bass ackwards sense. It's not frustrating. It's a little sad that more people aren't really embracing this. They're just scared of it.
Well, that's awesome. And once again, this was Chuck Rinker with founder and CEO of Personas, and that's PRSONAS.com. There'll be a link in our show notes and everything. You can check out his company. Definitely check out this episode on YouTube if you want to see the quick glimpse of his physical device he had there. That was pretty cool earlier. But Chuck, thank you so much for being on the show today. This was a very cool topic, and I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely, Matt. I told you it'd be a fun one.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.